Happy Friday. Welcome back to Brandon Wilborn's Fantasy Fiction, where fans of classic fantasy adventures can hear the serialized audiobooks of a fellow nerd and indie author completely for free. I'm your author, narrator, and host, Brandon Wilborn. Thanks for listening this week. The story portion of this episode starts about the 45-second mark. Last week in the Treasure of Caprick, Louise led the boys to a cottage in the woods outside Dury, where they met the lonesome woodsman Gideon and got a hot meal, a change of clothes, and a well-deserved nap. In the city, Fallon prepared his trap and waited for the boys to move. This week, I'll be reading from Chapter 12, following that a behind-the-keyboard segment about the story details that get filled in by life experience. Now I present for your enjoyment The Treasure of Caprick. Chapter 12. Fox and Hound. Curion woke as soon as Tobin touched his shoulder. It didn't feel like any time had passed at all. The fire had dimmed to embers in the hearth, and the lamps no longer burned, so the darkness convinced him that he had slept for several hours. The room was still warm, but there was a draft when the wind whistled through the shutters.
"I've always envied your ability to sleep so soundly," Tobin said, smiling. "Time to go."
"You mean Rhys, don't you?"
He blinked his eyes and slapped his cheeks to wake up.
"Rhys sleeps quickly. You sleep hard."
For a moment, Tobin looked the way he used to on the morning of an exam, tired and worried.
"I almost had to pull your arm off just now."
"No, you only touched my shoulder,"
Curion argued. Tobin looked back in disbelief. Louise and Alden sat at the table whispering to each other. He looked as comfortable and healthy as he had been at the Briny Mug, while Louise was dirty from traveling. Her hair had dried with a slight wave to it that drew Curian's eye. She had changed from the blouse and skirt they had met her in to the tunic and trousers in the same style as the clothes offered to the men. It was shocking to see a woman wearing them, but it might be a convincing disguise if she covered her hair. Curian dressed while Rhys helped himself to another bowl of stew, and Noman kneeled in the corner praying. He noticed their packs leaning near the door, looking full again. A pair of walking sticks and four short swords also stood against the wall.
"Stopped raining," Gideon said as he opened the door. "Grab your packs. Second watch starts in just over an hour. If we hurry, we can cross the river while they're thinking about their bunks."
They did as he told them and filed out into the night. Alden and Noman took the staves, while the rest grabbed swords. Then Gideon took off his own satchel.
"A parting gift for you, from the king," he said, and pulled out light cloaks for each of them. "To help keep the rain off, and to cover up that hair," he said to Louise.
They jogged as quickly and quietly as they could, skirting the forest until they neared the road.
"Have to be careful," Gideon whispered. "Patrols are coming down the road all the way through the forest, and the mayor's instituted a curfew, so we're the only ones out tonight."
He paused and looked toward the road.
"Wait here a moment," he said,
and then moved closer in a crouched run. He kneeled behind a tree, looking toward the road. Curion wasn't sure how he could see anything under the shadow of the trees. After a few moments, Gideon made a warbling whistle.
"Our turn,"
Alden said, and led the others forward.
"No sound of patrols,"
Gideon said to them, creeping out from the underbrush. He signaled for them to follow and then trotted across the road. The rest of them followed in a line. When they were scrambling down the muddy riverbank, they heard the snapping of bushes behind them.
"Stop!"
they heard a voice yell behind them, then,
"Here! They're here!"
"Run!" Gideon said. "Our only chance is the forest on the other side."
Curion watched him help Louise, Noman, and Alden down the last part of the bank. He thought he should position himself at the opposite side to help them back up, and was just beginning to move when the long blast of a horn came from the road. The knock at the door stopped Fallon's walking. The sentry outside opened it and stuck his head inside.
"Sir, you should hear this."
He stepped out of the door and faintly heard a horn blowing in the distance. The pattern of the call told him exactly which lookout it was.
"The Southern Road,"
he said, and ran to his horse tied at the corner of the tavern.
"Take your horse and go to the other posts. Send half their men to me and the rest out on the roads to search. They know my orders. Only 3 men at each gate. Go."
They both mounted and rode in opposite directions. Fallon spurred his horse to a gallop. The hunt was on. He blew through the gates in under a minute and passed 2 small squads of men running along the road to reach the horn. The first had split off from the gate as instructed. The second was one of the patrols on the road. Once they knew the direction their prey had run, they would spread out in a fan to search for the monks. The men from the cliff gates would do the same. If the Caprix persisted in moving toward the cliffs, his men would catch them in the middle. With 50 soldiers performing an orderly search, he was certain they could find these ridiculous monks. It was almost 2 miles to the southern edge of the forest, and he was winded from galloping at full speed the entire way. His horse breathed hard as well. The lookout stopped blowing the horn when he saw him.
"What news?"
he asked.
7 of them, sir, sneaking across the road and into the riverbed. Ran for the trees after I started blowing.
"Good man," Palin said. "Tell your comrades when they arrive, and carry out my previous orders."
The soldier saluted him, and he rode down to the riverbank. Soon he found the place where they had descended and followed the tracks across the river and toward the forest. There was just enough light filtering through the clouds to see the muddy trail in the open, but he wouldn't be able to track them through the forest in the dark. However, if he could pinpoint where they entered it, he could better position his men to search for them. The trap had sprung. The Caprix had walked straight into the jaws that would soon close about them. Fallon smiled. They would pay for the dishonorable trick they had pulled before. They would wish for blindness after he had his turn to strike. Kurian was breathing heavily by the time they stopped running. They had pushed deep into the forest away from the river. He felt stuck, with no escape. There were, after all, dozens of soldiers searching for them. Thinking about that made it harder to breathe. The horn had stopped a moment before, but that probably meant they were following.
"They're going to come searching for us once they gather their numbers," Gideon said quietly. "Pray they don't have dogs."
"What should we do?"
Noman asked, breathing hard as well.
"We can act as a decoy," Alden said. "You 4 hide until they follow us, then sneak back to the cottage."
"Then what?" said Kurian. "Wait for you to come back?"
"Alden's right," Gideon said. "They'll chase whatever's moving in the dark, and I know these woods better than anybody. I can lead them where they'll get more than they bargain for."
"And we're just supposed to trust you'll return?"
Louise grabbed his pack and swung him around.
"I've brought you this far. It's time you trust me."
He could barely see her, just an outline, but he thought he knew how she looked at him based on her tone. He wanted to believe it was how she had looked at him when she first saw him. More than recognition, it was knowing. Remembering that, he found he wanted to trust her.
"Okay," he said hoarsely.
"The horses are already packed, just in case," said Gideon. "Plenty of supplies and a stash of money as well, if you take mine."
"If we're not back by morning, head for Whalesand," she told them. "I'll try to catch up, but if I don't, hire a boat to Rama and find a fisherman named Broadman. He'll take you the rest of the way."
The sound of men crashing through the underbrush at the forest edge hushed them all.
"Hide," Gideon told them, "and don't move until they give us chase."
Suddenly, Kurian couldn't see his massive form anymore, and he only heard a whisper of movement heading back toward the riverbed to tell him they had left. Tobin tugged on his shoulder, and together they crawled halfway under a fallen tree trunk where Rhys and Noman had already disappeared. The wet ground seeped through his new clothes, making him cold. He focused on trying to steady and quiet his breathing. Feeling Tobin's chest rise and fall against his shoulder helped to calm him. He needed to protect Tobin the way Tobin had protected him in the apple grove. The wind blew in the treetops, making them creak and sigh, and the sound of heavy footfalls and snapping branches came slowly closer. Finally, he heard a horse galloping at the forest edge, a couple 100 yards away.
"Kurian," he heard faintly over the wind. "I'm tired of chasing you, Kurian."
He recognized the voice as Captain Fallon.
"Come out now, and you'll live."
"Not one for subtlety,"
he whispered to Tobin, trying to stave off the panic and the bile rising in his throat. Tobin hushed him. He saw distant torches, ghostly lights floating between the trees. He could only hear the nearest soldiers. With every step, they sounded only an arm's length away, and then closer with the next. It was impossible to tell where they were until he saw the faint glow on the trees in front of him. Just as he thought he would see a soldier step into view, there was a commotion toward the river. Somebody was running through the undergrowth quickly. The snap of breaking branches shot through the forest, and the torchlight on the trees disappeared as he heard the soldiers take off in the direction of the noise.
"Here!"
some of them called far off, and the sound of running faded away. Captain Fallon's horse also galloped back toward the riverbank. Suddenly, a booming crash filled the forest, as if a tree had fallen over. After a moment of silence, the shrieks of wounded men reached them. Gideon must have left a terrible surprise. 8 pairs of men had already gone into the forest, and more were arriving from the bunkhouse. The screams of their comrades coming from inside the dark forest was beginning to rattle the newcomers.
"I heard some locals talking about the bear men in the forest,"
Fallon overheard one of them saying. He dismounted directly in front of the soldier and received a jittery salute.
"Soldier, button up that lip. It's a dark forest, and obviously some of our men had an accident."
"Yes, sir."
"Now get your torch and start your search."
Fallon grabbed a torch himself. He needed to see exactly what had happened in there. After giving orders to a corporal to organize the remaining men, he made his way quickly toward the screams. 6 soldiers stood with torches, surveying 2 wounded men and 1 corpse. A large piece of tree trunk, rigged as a trap, had struck all 3 and knocked the top from a smaller tree on its way down. It had hit the dead man directly and maimed the others with their ragged ends of hewn branches jutting out from every side. The Capricks were receiving help from somebody who knew this forest well. They had turned his trap against him. But he was not without hope. They were still out here somewhere.
"What are you doing just standing there?"
he said to the 6 men nearby.
"Get the wounded to the physician, and the 2 of you get back to searching."
He pointed to the 2 who looked the least composed at seeing the carnage and led them further into the forest. There was no trail to see in the dense undergrowth. The storm had littered the ground with broken branches, ruining another tool for tracking. He would have to rely on his large numbers and a thorough search. Eventually, they would scare them from hiding. The odds kept turning in this game, and it seemed a powerful force was working against him, protecting the Capricks. It couldn't possibly be their god. He hadn't spared their order from the fire, so it made no sense that these few would be so impossible to capture. Branches broke further ahead as somebody started running.
"The odds turn again,"
he said, and dashed forward as fast as the torchlight could illuminate his path. The torches had converged on a distant point, and the screaming men masked any accidental sounds as Currian snuck away with his friends. At the forest edge, they looked for signs of anybody watching. The plain stretched out to the south, dark and empty. Other soldiers with torches milled about on the road or between the forest and the riverbed, their night vision probably ruined. Fallon's horse stood in the light as well, but he was not on it. They had a perfect escape. Another uproar burst from the forest far behind them, causing them to pause and drop to the ground. This time, a higher-pitched scream filled the air.
"Louise,"
Currian said, and began pushing himself off the ground. Rhys lunged and pushed him back down, laying on top of him.
"You do that, and we all die,"
he growled. Currian tried to shove him off, but Rhys had him pinned.
"I don't like it either, but we can't help them. They gave us the chance to get away."
He stopped struggling and nodded before Rhys let him up. With the fading sounds of men tearing through the forest behind them, they ran to get as far as they could into the empty plains. Before they were far, a white light blazed from behind them, and a sound like a peal of thunder knocked them to the ground. When Currian looked around, the trees appeared to be aflame with a white light. As he stared, it faded to a central point. The light dazzled his eyes so he could not focus after the glow was gone. Without a word, they got up and fled. The sky opened again with a fresh downpour, and they escaped into the storm. They kept going until his lungs burned and his legs stumbled from exhaustion. Currian felt a muddle of rage, pain, and grief seethe up in his heart as he ran. When they finally stopped, it drained away, leaving him empty and powerless. Louise had sacrificed herself for them. He wondered if this was how the Dean felt as he had watched the compound burn from Aberford. He looked at Tobin and shook his head.
"We had to,"
Rhys said from behind. Then both his friends put their arms around him, and together they wept.
That was the finale for part 1 of the book. The boys have lost their guide. Will they find a way to get to the King of the Caves without her? And what exactly happened in those woods? Was it more magic? Join me next Friday as The Treasure of Capric continues with Part 2 and Chapter 13, Blubber and Bone. In this week's Behind the Keyboard segment, I want to point out my mistakes.
I noticed something while reading this chapter that will likely be different in Book 2. Since I wrote this, I've spent a lot more time in the woods than I previously had, so there's a few details that would have made this chapter more difficult on everyone that I've learned since I published. Most notably, sneaking around the woods after a heavy rain is even more miserable and more dangerous. Fallen trees, or deadfall, as it's often called, can be slicker than snot, even when they're dry. I've had at least one nearly disastrous slip myself when climbing over deadfall in the woods. And with all the broken branch nubs that are sticking out, it could easily lead to a very significantly not free helicopter ride to the hospital. I try to avoid deadfall whenever I can, but sometimes out here in these Northwest forests, there are so many fallen trees that it's impossible not to climb over some of them. They just get crisscrossed back and forth across a whole area, and it's a challenge to get through. But those huckleberries ain't going to pick themselves, and they're so worth it. They're one of God's little miracles. All that's to say, if I were going to rewrite this chapter, I might overemphasize the challenge of sneaking around a wet woods at night with no flashlights. I've already corrected that error somewhat in Book 2 with a little bit more detail out of any scenes that occur in the woods. Of course, in this case, the inherent danger only makes it easier for Gideon to go a little John Rambo on the soldiers in that last scene. Like I said last week, he's a fun character to write, mostly because he's so unpredictable. Even after that initial surprise of him just showing up in the story, I just can't guess what he might do when I'm typing about him. If you have any questions or comments, I would love to hear them. You can send me a message or leave me a voicemail by going to brandonwilborn.com/contact. And I really would love to hear from you. I answer all those emails and voicemails myself. That link is in the description for an easy way to reach out to me. And Mom, if you're listening, you're allowed to send me messages too. Thanks again for listening to the show. If you're enjoying it, please give it a 5-star rating and review if those options are in your podcast app. Then share the show with your Fellowship of Fantasy fans. Like I said in episode 1, I'd recommend an audience over 14 if that helps you find appropriate listeners or readers. That's all for this week. Until next time, Godspeed. The Treasure of Caprick is also available in print and ebook formats from all major booksellers. Find a link to your favorite retailer in the show description or go to brandonwilborn.com. That's brand on, not brand off, and Wilborn is as simple as you can make it. WILBORN. This has been The Treasure of Caprick, Book 1 of The King of the Caves, written and narrated by Brandon M. Wilborn. Copyright Brandon M. Wilborn.